Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Final hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's had a good day to this point. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. You know, over the years, 7+ years, this time on Tuesdays, we speak with Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason. And obviously we know with what transpired over the weekend, that is not going to be the case today. But the interim head coach, who was the OC, Todd Fitch, who we've spoken to in the past as well, has been nice enough to step in Coach Mason's place. Coach, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. When did you get informed of all this happening over the weekend?
Well, good to talk to you guys. I was kind of like everybody else, you know, Sunday morning, you know, came into work as a normal day after a game. And you know, Coach Mason and I had a chance to sit down that morning and visit a little bit, and then you know, he kind of let me know what was going on and you know, the direction things were heading. And then I, you know, spoke with Dr. Lee, and we spent some time together, and it kind of, you know, rolled on from there. So, you know, really Sunday morning, you know, Sunday early afternoon, things, you know, kind of sped up, and obviously it's been a whirlwind since then.
Sure. And we've talked to Derek every Tuesday and know that you guys have dealt with a lot here in 2020 and this season. Nothing has been smooth, and it's not just Vanderbilt, but nothing has been smooth. So with that being said, you've had to deal with so much of the COVID issues and everything else that comes with the season, no out-of-conference games, nothing but SEC games. Throughout your talks with Derek Mason, did you get an inkling? Did he get an inkling? Did he have a feeling that maybe this could happen? Was that ever discussed before this weekend?
No, you know, obviously he and I never discussed anything like that. No, you know, we've been talking recruiting and recruiting numbers, and, you know, we've had a great recruiting class put together. You know, I think we got a commitment or two last week, actually. And, you know, so we've been talking about future things. And, you know, obviously the season wasn't going well, but, you know, I never, you know, never had those conversations with Derek myself. Obviously, I don't know his conversations with Dr. Lee or anything, but, you know, here it was, you know, business as usual and, you know, pressing on with the schedule. And then obviously with an eye toward, you know, finishing the recruiting class up as we get closer to signing day here, you know, the middle of December.
I remember us talking to you when you first got hired. So going back to that day when you first arrived here to where we sit today, now that you've got a better idea of what you've signed up for, what this job entails, is it what you thought? Is it tougher? What are your thoughts sitting here today about this Vanderbilt job?
Well, there's a lot of things I thought, you know, were true. You know, I mean, you know, the makeup of the school, the type of players you had, all that stuff never changed. You know, you knew that walking in. But, you know, obviously for everybody in the country, the COVID, you know, situation with the, you know, never having a spring practice, obviously at that point, you know, had 4 days. And then, you know, in the fall camp, you know, multiple stoppages and, you know, just never had the same people. So that you can't predict those things, obviously. And then on top of that, which has been well documented, you know, the number of opt-outs we had, which really detracted from our early progress as an offense, just because it hit one position hard on offense, the offensive line. You know, we really had to rebuild and restart in, you know, in the middle of August with those group guys. And to their credit, they've done a really good job, you know, for where we're at and what we have. I've been really proud of the offensive line, but those things you couldn't predict. And, you know, there's not much you can do about it. You can't complain. I'll give Derek credit. He never, you know, used that as a crutch. You know, nobody does and no one wants to. And, you know, we just came to work every day and did, you know, put together the best game plans we can and just try to keep on improving the product on the field as much as we can.
Yeah. In fact, it was after our talk last week with Derek, because he'd just done his press conference. I know you did that as well. And things really didn't start coming out till more toward the end of the show or after the show about Sarah Fuller. So kind of take us through the decision, you know, last week to how that all played out throughout the course of the week to leading up to what happened in Columbia on Saturday.
Yeah, just, you know, like obviously it's a, you know, COVID-related issue. And with the contact tracing that you have, you know, you can wipe out. It's, you know, it's happened all over the country at some point in time, you know, in certain position groups. That's why you have so many cancellations over every weekend. you know, it gets into a position group room, and through the contact tracing, it just happened to wipe out everybody that happened to be a kicker, you know. And yeah. So I wasn't really involved in the, you know, the day-to-day of that. Obviously, at that point, Coach Mason was with the other people. But, you know, obviously looking for, you know, don't have a men's soccer team, so we went to the women's soccer team and talked to Coach Ambrose you know, brought her name up, Sarah's name up, and she came over, and, you know, the guys, you know, welcomed her in open arms, and, you know, and just we tried to make the best of a bad situation, if you would. And so that's really kind of how it unfolded.
Todd Fitch on the line with us. He is the interim men's, the football coach at Vanderbilt. So with that being said, Sarah said after the game and in doing her press, talking with the media, she said that she would love to continue with that. So as the interim right now, that is your title. What is her status with the team?
She's still here. She, you know, she voiced to Coach Mason and then those people after the game, like you mentioned, that she would like to continue if she could, and, you know, Coach you know, extend that offer to her. And so she's at practice this morning. You know, she was kicking for us this morning some, and she's still here, and I think she enjoys it. I think she enjoys being out there, and obviously she's a competitor, and so, you know, we're just trying to, you know, put together our roster the best we can for this weekend's game in Georgia. But she's still a part of it, and she was out there this morning.
You know, I had to admit yesterday on the show when I heard her talking about kind of the halftime speech and kind of the energy or lack of on the sidelines, that was a little bit alarming to me, to kind of the status of where you guys are as a team. And I just talked about, you know, you guys have had to deal with a lot of adversity. So with that being said, where are you in this final stretch run to trying to close this out, trying to find a way to get a win? It did feel like, you know, because of the opt-outs and because of COVID and because of just everything that's happened this season, Todd, it does feel like a team. I mean, are they still in this? Do they still want to fight to the end, or are they kind of looking for this season to be over?
Well, you know, I can only go by what I see. And obviously, you know, recent history as you look through it. A week ago before we played Florida and had great energy. I thought that, you know, we ran to the ball better on defense. They played better up front on defense that game and did a good job the first half against Florida's offense, which was high powered. Offensively, we moved the ball. We had over 400 yards of offense. We actually stopped ourselves when we didn't score a couple of times in the first half. We should, you know, had a couple of touchdowns that we stopped, you know, they didn't stop us. So there was energy. There was enthusiasm there. You know, we did not perform as well last week on the road, you know, a game at Missouri. You know, there's no excuse for that. I don't think it was there into it or not into it or shutting it down. I think one thing you've touched on as this season progresses and with your numbers, as limited as they are, you know, every week's a battle, especially for your O-line and D-line. There's no break. There's no off week. There's no, you know, there's no non-conference. And, you know, it does take a toll on the bodies. I think it's more of just, you know, the wear and tear of the bodies than it is a buy-in factor. And so we have to be smart with our practice time. But, you know, this week's a different challenge. You know, obviously we've had a lot of distractions with everything going on with Coach Mason. And, you know, we've just tried to, you know, center everything around with our staff about our players and making sure our players are taken care of. And, you know, trying to stay focused, keep them in as normal cycle as we can, because people need structure. You know, it's easy, especially when you're 18, 19 years old, to wonder about what's the future, what happened, why did that happen, you know, all the questions that are natural for somebody to have. So I'm just trying to make sure that we stay as an organization on structure, on task. Don't put our head in the sand like there's nothing going on. That would be stupid. But, you know, today's practice, I thought the guys had pretty good energy. I thought they were moving around pretty good. You know, there's a little bit of question going on, but that's to be natural. I would like it that way instead of everybody just out there smiling and cheering, because that would be fake. You know what I mean? So, I wouldn't say I like where we're at, but I do think that the guys, as we go later this week, as we progress closer to the Georgia game, I think we'll have a pretty focused group, and, you know, we're going to have a tall task on our hand. They're a good football team, but, you know, I think they'll go play and perform as best they can.
We're talking to Todd Fitch. He is the interim head coach for the Vanderbilt Commodores as they get ready for Georgia on Saturday. And, Coach, you just talked about, you know, sort of the team mentality, the uncertainty. How tough is this for you? Maybe this is a better question for you a couple weeks down the road here once you've been through it. But how tough is it for you right now to be in this position, try to do the best you can as a professional, and also at the same time you've got to look out for your situation somewhere on the radar here?
Yeah, you know, it's part of our business, which is the unfortunate part of our business. So as you said, you know, you have to be a pro about it. And you have to keep in mind that it's a player-driven thing. If they're not players, they're not coaches. You know, what a coach told me that one time, and it was pretty eye-opening. You know, if there weren't players, there would be no coaches. So we got to keep our mind focused on the players first. And, you know, my future, the coach's future, that will take care of itself. You know, wherever I'm supposed to be, I'll be. And you know, fortunately, I'm in a stage in my career with my family situation. I don't have as many issues maybe with moving kids as some of the other guys on our staff do, which I feel bad for those people because that's the difficult part of this profession. But, you know, we'll worry about that when this is all said and done. I have an obligation to the school and to these players to, you know, just give us all our attention to them and give them the best experience we can for the next 2-3 weeks whenever we decide, you know, when that last game is going to be played.
Coach, you mentioned Sarah, and it's hard. I mean, it's just unbelievable the admiration you have to have for her, her willingness to jump in there and participate like this. Now, it's an interesting situation. I'm really glad to know that she wants to stick around and see it through here. I'm curious, at this point, do you know if you will get any of the other options back who were the kickers before? And I also read a story, a speculation of Riley Gay, who was the kicker in the past, who I believe is in graduate school but wasn't playing this year. He might be an option. I don't know where that is right now, but will there be some other options for you that maybe Sarah is competing this week to get a chance to play again?
The guys that are on the current roster who, you know, are quarantined and everything, they should be back at the end of this week, you know, going into the Tennessee game, like I said, whenever that game gets scheduled going forward. So, you know, that last game, I think we'll have our full, you know, force of, you know, specialists back. The Riley Gay kid that you mentioned, I met him, you know, briefly the other day on Sunday. You know, he is on campus. I wasn't here, obviously, when he was on the roster.
Right.
There is a chance that there is some competition that's not done. There's just a lot of things that have to be crossed at that point. But, you know, we're going to do whatever we can, and this is not about, you know, Sarah, but our obligation is to make sure we put the best people in place and have competition in every position. So if we can create, you know, competition and more depth of the position, we're certainly going to do it if we think it helps us, you know, on Saturday afternoons.
It's been fun to watch Seals, the young quarterback, get in there. There's not a whole lot of guys who get a chance as true freshmen to jump in there and play. I'm curious your thoughts as you've watched him throughout the season, learn on the fly a little bit, learn what you can get away with, what he does really well, the mistakes he's got to avoid in the future. He seems to really have a bright future, though.
No, he does. I think he's a young man that, you know, he does learn well. He's very mature for his age in terms of, you know, how he handles his business. And, you know, he's got a full load. I mean, he's an engineering, you know, he's trying to get an engineering program here. And, you know, he's toiling away that way. And
now, there's a building, Coach, that I avoided big time. When I was a student, I went nowhere near that building.
I told him, I said, God bless you. I don't know if I can do that. But, so he's got a full plate, but he's handled it pretty well. As you mentioned, you know, it's been, you know, you're learning on the run, as I think you voiced it that way, and I think it's a great way to put it because, you know, you have to play this position to learn how to play it. You can't just draw it on the board. You just can't watch it on video. You have to physically go play it, and you have to play through mistakes. Now, you know, mistakes, you know, are obviously different magnitude. We've had some that were critical mistakes as the season's gone on, but, you know, it's a growing pain type thing. But, you know, he stayed steady. He stayed calm. And throughout this deal, he's learned how the speed of the game has begun to slow down for him. There's still times it's a little fast, but, you know, I think his future is bright. I think we have a couple of good young quarterbacks here. And you know, I think, you know, as, in the springtime, it's going to be a heck of a competition again. You know, we really haven't had a quarterback competition here because of when Kenny got here, there was, you know, 4 days and shut down. He got every rep, and, you know, he's done a great job with it. Mike Wright is a young man here who's got a lot of talent. And Jeremy Musa, who's here, he can really throw the ball. And, you know, so the good thing about the position, there's some guys that can actually play the position, I think, at a high level down the road. And that's only going to help Kenny because you got to come to work every day and perform. And that's the key to having a good quarterback is that there's got to be a talent level. There's got to be a certain makeup mentally for the guy, which I think he has. But there's also going to be competition that you got to prove yourself, you know, every day going forward. And that will only make them all better players. And I certainly think that will, you know, keep Kenny growing as they move forward here.
Vanderbilt interim coach Todd Fitch on the line with us, and appreciate you joining us today through all this craziness that you've gone through. You brought up Mike Wright, and we've seen him worked in some to the offense, mm-hmm. and you as the OC doing that. So how is, just to expand upon him a little bit of how he's developed when he is called upon.
Yeah, I think he's developed a decent amount over the year. He unfortunately missed 2 weeks of the season with a quarantine issue, and so he really, you know, stopped his growth potential there for a while. But you know, he's getting better. He's getting more consistent with his throwing, which I think is a big thing for him. He has a nice arm. He's got to tighten things down and become a little bit more consistent. He has, you know, obviously good athleticism, moves around well, and just like Kenny, both those guys are really highly competitive guys, bright and have, you know, different makeups about them, but yet both have the ability to lead and have people look up to them. And I think they, you know, have a chance to, you know, really be good football players. And so I really like his future also. And both of them are great makeup kids. I mean, they're just good people and they're good to have around the team.
I know last night you said you spent more time talking to defensive players than you have all year, which makes sense as the offensive coordinator, but because you're the interim coach, but you're still going to be the OC, how much are you going to rely on Coach Roof and Coach Fitzsimmons to kind of help be, I guess, co-head coaches to help navigate you through the other position groups?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, Coach Fitzsimmons with special teams, and he does a lot of the game management things, you know, timeouts and, you know, just, you know, clock situations, things like that. So that would be big because, you know, especially when we're on the ball, you know, you got so many things going through your mind, you know, with play calling. And then obviously Coach Roof, you know, you're really, you know, running the defense, obviously. And, you know, I'm not going to get involved in that. You know, he and I talk, we always talk in any situation, you know, even when Coach Mason was here. But, you know, he'll be a great resource, obviously, and you know, on game day. And we'll talk, you know, as the game unfolds about, you know, probably more game management things. You know, should we go for it here on fourth down? You know, do we need to punt on it? How you feel? You know, that kind of thing on defense. And so we'll have those communication things going along as the game unfolds for sure.
Well, the good news is the schedule allows you to kind of ease in as the interim head coach against Georgia.
Yeah.
So that'll be.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. Best of luck against the Bulldogs, and would love to do it again this time next week.
All right. You guys have a great day.
All right, you too. That is Todd Fitch. He is the interim head coach at Vanderbilt. He was the offensive coordinator of the season, and, boy, they will have their hands full. They are a 5-touchdown underdog versus Georgia on Saturday. We'll come back. Mitch Light on the other side from The Athletic. More college football. So, by the way, I thought that was interesting. Did you guys catch what he said about the quarterback? Best way to learn the position is what?
Play it. Yep.
Kind of going back to our conversations with Vince Ferrara.
I think another choice.
There's only one way to get experience, get experience. Play.
Yep. There you go. And I wonder if that's about to change in Knoxville.
I think I said that one time about, you know, doing radio.
Yeah.
Just got to do it.
Just got to get the reps.
Yeah.
Can't learn it in a room. Can't learn it in the classroom.
Cannot.
Well, you don't have a minor league system in college football, right? You'd love to at least have the next level of – that's the whole purpose of minor league baseball. Don't get me started on that soapbox with where minor league baseball is going, but that's how players develop, right? But you don't have that, and you cannot simulate the game situation in practice. So there's only one way to get experience in college football, and that's to get in there and play. So.
We'll go from Fitch to Mitch on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase. Thank you, Laura. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. It's Tuesday afternoon. Talked with Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I am good. I'm good, Darren. And I heard your interview with Coach Fitch, and I was going to agree with Willie that, you know, tried to avoid the engineering building. And this is actually, since we're in a coaching search, this is actually a kind of humorous story. I, in 4 years as a student in my X year since I graduated, thought I'd never step foot in the engineering building. But I remember the one time I did, I was a sports editor for the Vanderbilt Hustler, and Jerry DiNardo had just taken over as head coach, and I tried to get a Q&A with him for the paper, and they kept rescheduling. I showed up at his office, and finally he shook my hand. He said, "We're going for a walk." So I'm interviewing him, walking through McGugan. We get in a car. I think it was Rick George's car. They drive on campus, go into the engineering building. He says, "Wait here." He goes and talks to a dean for like 15 minutes, engineering building, comes out. I interview him walking back to the car, in the car, drive to another part of campus. I think it was like the English department or something, dean. So I interviewed Jerry DiNardo for the first time ever bouncing around all these offices while he introduced himself to the deans on campus. So I guess I have been in the engineering office, engineering building.
Well, I'm with you guys. I had friends in school. We were there that they were in that that field, and they lived in that building. And I barely saw them.
Yeah, I know we're joking, but I always really had a lot of respect for Vanderbilt athletes who were engineers because that's a lot of work. I mean, certain majors are harder than, like, I was an economics major. I thought it was hard, but I didn't work nearly as hard as the engineering major. So that is a commitment there. So I did not know Ken Seals was the engineering major. So congrats. Sorry for that, kid.
Yeah, much respect for sure, because I think we also know, regardless of what college you went to, some people that started off as engineering majors and then changed their major quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been
me. Yeah.
What was your level of surprise when the news came out that Derek Mason was no longer going to be the Vanderbilt coach?
I was surprised when it happened. I had actually thought about it some based on the performance on Saturday. And I said, you know what, if it wasn't inevitable before then, it's inevitable now. I thought with all of the attention that game received for the obvious reasons that they might let things breathe a little bit and wait a week and maybe do it after the Georgia game. And then maybe there was a scenario there where Coach Mason coached the Tennessee game. You know, we've seen that in some cases where kind of a well-liked and respected coach stays on board. But obviously, and I applaud Candace Lee for doing it when she did. It was kind of an awkward time the day after the Missouri game, but she obviously has a plan going forward with signing day and all that. So, Darren, not surprised it happened. Relatively surprised the day it happened.
So what do you think? What is the direction? We've all seen the list and the names that are floating out there. Do you have anything new to add? Do you think that is the list? Where are you at on what we've seen to this point, a couple days removed from that decision?
I think the list is usually those lists are pretty accurate.
Okay.
They're you know, the media comes up with them a lot of times, but they make sense. And I think the names you've seen out there for Vanderbilt make sense. I think Will Healy, Jamie Chadwell, and Clark Lee, if I were running the search, would clearly be the three guys that I would focus on. I think there's a very attractive candidate pool this year. I think certain years there's a good group of up-and-coming coaches or hot coordinators or just other really solid coaches at Group of Five schools that you look at and say, yeah, they're good candidates for a Power Five job. In certain years, there aren't. I think Vanderbilt is in a great situation this year. Those three guys I mentioned, Lance Leopold at Buffalo was a very, very good coach who's done a great job at a school that, you know, has never won. Willie Fritz doesn't have a great record at Tulane, but they've had a ton of close, painful losses over the last years. He recruits very well. He runs a fun offense. So those three guys I mentioned, I think, would be really good. But then there's even another group out there that I think would be very attractive, too. So, I think Vanderbilt's in an advantageous position.
Who would be atop your list?
I can't decide. I think my list would be Jamie Chadwell, number one, from Coastal Carolina, Will Healy, 1B, and then Clark Lee. I think there's a lot I like about Clark Lee. The fact that he hasn't been a head coach would be the reason he'd be third on my list behind those two guys.
Okay, interesting. There is a lot of stuff out there swirling after Texas gagged away that game on Friday against Iowa State. I know you've seen it just like the rest of us, that Urban Meyer to Texas, that Tom Herman is not going to be able to survive this. If indeed, well, let me just ask you, do you believe any of that? Do you believe that it's about time for Urban Meyer? He's been away long enough. It's time for him to scratch the itch. It's time for him to get back in for his 4 or 5 year run somewhere else before he gets out again.
It makes great sense for him to do it at Texas, if of all places, at coaching Florida, Ohio State, and Texas. Do I think he'll be the head coach there next year? No. I think there's too many, you know, I'm not sure that Tom Herman will be gone, and the fact that he does enjoy his work at Fox. There's no doubt about that. He's actually very, very good. I don't know about you guys, but I've actually changed my viewing habits from just when I do watch the pregame shows, it was always College Game Day. I now flip the Fox all the time because
I agree with
very,
you.
Yeah, he's very, very good there. So I would love for it to happen just as a fan of the sport. It would be fun. But my guess is, and this might, and I always talk to you guys about this, I'm always wrong because I'm always way too conservative and say that coaches are going to get an extra year and they don't. But my guess is Tom Herman survives this.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Mark that down. Mark that down.
Okay.
Cold, you know, freezing cold takes, but I'll
put that one. Mark the tape. All right. So Michigan, boy, that was a nice follow up to their double overtime victory over Rutgers. They lose at home to Penn State, who hadn't won a game. How's this Jim Harbaugh stuff going to play out? Is he going to survive?
I don't think he gets fired, but I put it this way. I'm not nearly as confident in him being the head coach at Michigan as I was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yeah. That performance was alarming. Penn State was a team that was reeling just as badly as Michigan was, and you just didn't love. I didn't watch the entire game by any stretch.
They're pathetic. They're just flat out pathetic.
Yeah, they were very fortunate to beat Rutgers. I watched a lot of that game. They're better than that. And it's not all recruiting. You can't just say, I know they recruit well, but they have players. They should be better. And one side note is he has a top 10 recruiting class right now at Michigan. So it's not like things are, Will Muschamp, we changed the subject slightly. Things were trending in the wrong direction, and his recruiting class was like in the 40s. Jim Harbaugh is still recruiting well there. But it is a messy situation. And as we talk about Vanderbilt trying to find the right fit, was there a better fit than Harbaugh at Michigan in the past 10 years? Scott Frost at Nebraska and Harbaugh at Michigan were maybe the two best fits we've seen in college football searches over the past 5 or 10 years, and neither are going very well.
Talking to Mitch Light, who is with The Athletic, covers college football as one of the editors on their team. Also, Mitch, of course, for those that don't know, longtime sideline reporter at Vanderbilt, writer, historian. I'm going to give you that tag,
wow.
Mitch. So I want to ask for your historical context of Derek Mason's tenure now that it is over, because there's so many different ways to look at it. I would have thought that after about halfway through his first year, I wasn't sure he was going to make it through the second year. To be honest, he fired both coordinators after the first year. It was a total disaster. And this was right on the heels of the best run they've ever had as a football program. And I would have said, there's no way he's going to get this team to a bowl game. He got them to two. He beat Tennessee 3 straight times. So there's some good things on the ledger here. So where do you put that when you compare it to the other Vanderbilt coaches that you've seen?
He had one advantage that he had, and it's nothing against him, the 12-game schedule. He was afforded the opportunity to go to a bowl game at 6-6. Bobby Johnson had at least one, I think two good teams that went, relatively good teams that went 5-6. And if you added another non-conference game, maybe they go to a bowl game. Woody Woodenhofer's 1999 team goes 5-6 and a ton of close losses, painful losses. Maybe that team goes, 6-6 and goes to a bowl game there. So whenever you mention the bowl games by a head coach, you got to kind of look at the era in which they coached. And going back to Bobby Johnson, let's say one of those years he goes 5-6, he actually goes 6-6 and they go to a bowl game, and that speeds up recruiting. Because his best recruiting class, I believe, at Vanderbilt was the one 2 years after his bowl. That usually was the cycle. Once you go to a bowl game, maybe the next year and a half, you start recruiting better. But Derek Mason, no doubt, did some good things. He was very close to having two really good teams. His two teams that went to a bowl game, they were both 6-7 and 3-5. His 2016 team goes 3-5, lose 4 league games by 7 points or fewer. So that was really close to being maybe a 7 or 8 win team. And his 2018 team goes 6-7, lose by Notre Dame by 5, Florida by 10, Missouri by 5, had a good offense. So I think what ended up being the downfall were some recruiting misses and some bad luck at the quarterback position. I'm not going to boil it down to just that, but when Kyle Shermer left and then Andy Ludwig left, they were left last year with some really good offensive players and no quarterback, and the struggle with the offensive coordinator position, I guess you could say. So I think he will be remembered fondly for going to those two bowl games and beating Tennessee three times. But another thing about that I think sticks out about Coach Mason's tenure, when his teams weren't good, they were really bad. Statistically, some of the worst teams at Vanderbilt that we've seen in the last 10 or 20 years. I think Bobby Johnson's teams that didn't have great records, you saw them steadily get more and more competitive. This last year and a half, the last 2 years under Derek Mason's tenure, were quite frankly two of the worst teams we've seen in recent history.
Good stuff. Yeah, it makes you wonder, had they not discovered and had Kyle Shurmur, you know, how much different would it have looked? Because, as you said, the quarterback play was everything. They had horrendous quarterback play a big percentage of the time. But when he was in there, he made all the difference in the world.
Yep. I mean, it just goes to show you. I was – sometimes when you're in it, you don't appreciate how good a guy is. And I know he signed with the Broncos, but if he never plays in the NFL, it doesn't diminish that he was a really good college quarterback. You know, you go into last year and you're thinking, okay, well, you lose Shurmur, but you got two other guys fighting for the job, and they could kind of, they're more mobile, they can do something. Well, no, it didn't work out that way. He was just a really good college quarterback, and I thought Andy Ludwig was a good, very good offensive coordinator as well. I thought losing him was very big, too.
Another historical question here for you. I watch Alabama. I mean, they're just blowing people away. And part of the thing that they were discussing on Saturday's broadcast is they might actually get the kid that broke his leg on the first play of the Tennessee game back before it's all over.
Waddle.
Waddle. They're not missing him at all. So where do you rank this Alabama team compared to the championship-level teams they've had before?
Yeah, that one's tough for me. They kind of all blend together. But offensively, clearly at or near the top. I mean, they've not missed a beat without Tua. This offensive line is really, really good. Obviously, they are not playing defense to the same level that some of those early Nick Saban era teams are, but no one really is. The defensive, Nick Saban's even said that. You know, I'm sure you guys all have seen his comments lately. Nobody plays defense like that anymore. Just the numbers, the offensive numbers in college football, yards per game, yards per play, have taken off in the past 5 years. So they're kind of like LSU was last year. They're not great on defense. They're better than LSU was, but it doesn't really matter because they are just so explosive on offense and they can beat you so many different ways. So is it the best Alabama team? I wouldn't go that far, but I think the difference – between Alabama and the rest of the league might be as great as it's been. And I'm looking forward to the Alabama-Florida SEC championship game. I think Florida can score some points on them, but we've seen Florida's defensive vulnerabilities. There's no doubt Alabama will score a ton of points in that game.
Mitch Light here with us from The Athletic, joins us every week after Coach Fitch. We're all going to ask you Vanderbilt questions, apparently.
That's fine. And by the way, going from Mitch after Mason to Mitch after Fitch, do you need you guys to talk to Candace Lee about getting this on coach so we can go? My name kind of blends with that. That might be a factor.
I've already sent the email to her office about that. We have to make sure that the alliteration is all there. So
I'm sure that's a very high priority. Yeah,
it is. I think it should be. So I'm gonna try and sell you on a candidate that you haven't brought up. And I want you to just give me your opinion. The biggest knock is he's never been a college coach. Former NFL coach. Okay. Has moved two teams, so has dealt with a unique situation. You probably already know where I'm going with this. Has dealt with a unique situation, which
Mitch
we
after
all,
Fish.
Bill Parcells.
That works.
Mitch after Fish. There you go. We got the guy.
That works. But he also knows how to navigate those type waters because Vanderbilt is such a unique job. And in a sense, Jeff Fisher has nothing to lose. He's accomplished a lot in his career. He's made his money. He's also hungry because he misses coaching, wants to get in the game. He's expressed that before. The reports have been out there that he was interested in Vanderbilt a couple of years ago. So why not? Because of knowing what kind of salesman he can be, which is what that program needs.
I don't think the one thing that way and this might not be fair to Coach Fisher, but the way you sold it is he's got nothing to lose. I don't know if I want to coach you as nothing to lose. Like, and I'll answer the question better in a minute, but do I want to hire a coach who's like, sounds like it's a good idea, then after a year and a half in, he says, you know, it's not what I thought, and then, you know, he's already made all his money.
Yeah, I think you have a Rod Dauhauer image that pops into your head. Like, he had already accomplished a lot, so, you know, his legacy is not going to swing on whether he does well in this particular spot. I get that argument.
Yeah, so Chase, I guess my point would be, if the pool of candidates weren't so attractive or that I found so attractive, I would consider it more. I don't think it would be the worst thing by any stretch. I do think he's a good football coach, and I've talked to some people about this too. You know, the Dauhauer staff brought in a lot of NFL guys. Woody became the head coach. They developed some very good players. Go look at that late 90s, especially on defense. They coached those guys up. They developed them, a lot of future NFL players, and they had some pretty good teams. So I know it's a different era, different coaches, but you can't just say, oh, he's an NFL coach. You can't coach college kids. I thought those guys did a good job coaching. But again, I'll just go back to I think there's better candidates. Guys who've been college head coaches, hungrier, recruited more. They've been in the recruiting game. So it's not, I wouldn't be in my top 8 or 10, but if the pool of candidates weren't as great, I think someone, you know, if it were my decision, I would consider in certain instances.
Well, if it was a Tennessee search, then he'd be right in the thick of things if he was around 8 or 10 on the list, right? Is that what you're saying?
No comment.
Okay.
How do you think that, and obviously it changes day by day, but Ohio State, and they've missed some games, and if they miss more and they can't be in the Big Ten championship game, how do you think that the committee should handle that when they're coming up with their four?
Yeah, I'll give a good plug. Ari Wasserman and Bill Landis on our staff, both covered Ohio State for a long time, have a good counterpoint on our site about that today, addressing that very topic about how many games. And there looks like there's some good news coming out of Ohio State today. They're returning to activity, so there's some optimism that they'll be able to play Michigan State this week. One thing to consider is if they don't make the Big Ten championship game and they end up playing Wisconsin instead of Northwestern, yeah, they won't have a quote-unquote championship trophy, but playing Wisconsin at that point in the season might be perceived as a better win, better opportunity than playing Northwestern. So I think if they play this week, and if they get up to six games, they're fine. If for some reason this game gets canceled and the Michigan game gets canceled and they ended up playing four games or five games, you know, then you get in dicey. It's just it's a slippery slope with the committee. They're trying to pick the four best teams. How much if Ohio State's played four games, do you penalize them for not playing Illinois, a team that they're going to beat by 30 points anyway? Or you'd think, like, how much would you learn by them playing Illinois? So there's a lot of things to factor. I think Ohio State will end up being in the playoff. I do think they're one of the best four teams, but I think you really need to watch what happens this week. I think if they get this game in, because they're 4-0, right? I think they're 4-0. If they get this game in, that's five, and then no matter what happens with Michigan, who's having its problems, they can get that championship weekend game in, and that gets them to six, and I think they'd be in really good shape.
I think we need to get Mitch After Fitch sponsored by the Nintendo Switch. Just really keep it going. I think that would really
You've got one more week. You've got one more week for that. So right. So get on.
I'll get on it, Mitch.
If they'll send us product, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure Maddox would be all about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of spending money on that stuff. So yeah, I'll be all for it,
Mitch. We appreciate it as always, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care,
Mitch Light, The Athletic. Joining us every Tuesday. We'll come back, wrap up the show next. But, Darren, first, you have a word.
A little college hoops. Texas and Indiana right now playing 33-21. Tejas, early second half. Yeah, very low-scoring affair. Gonzaga and Baylor. Yeah, they're about ready to go toe-to-toe. Maybe for the top ranking in college basketball. By the way, a lot of big matchups tonight. Michigan State and Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, and don't forget about Gonzaga and Baylor. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is going to give you college basketball fans who sign up right now the chance to win $100 when you bet on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this big matchup. And plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when you sign up and use the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, all you have to do is bet $1. And you can turn that $1 into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win the game. But you must use the code 1025GAME during the sign-up process for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus is comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. You must see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you're someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
To give you an idea of some of the steps that the teams have taken to try to stay warm, this odd-looking object is what the Buccaneers will be wearing under their helmets throughout the afternoon. The Jets have taken some unusual measures, too. Almost all of them are wearing pantyhose. We had some, but the package is empty. I got to ask you, John, what happened?
I went down to the locker room to see what the players were wearing, and they were showing me these pantyhose. They said that they're the best thing you can wear, so they gave us a package, and I took them out and put them on.
Believe it or not, he's got them on.
Nothing says a morning jog like that clip right there. I mean, who doesn't want to lace up the sneakers and go jogging when hearing that? Apparently, Willie, that's what gets him going. A clip like that.
We're all looking for tips to what to do in the cold weather, so why not listen to John Madden and the New York Jets from 1982?
Sure.
Pantyhose under the football uniform.
Nothing gets the juices flowing more than hearing that. Talking John Madden talking about pantyhose. Maybe you should try that tomorrow and report back.
I'll maybe take a look. I'll take a look at it.
Take a look. What does that mean? You'll just like look at them and then say?
I'll probably pass.
Nah? Okay.
But let me ask you guys something, because it was a huge, huge story on Saturday, needless to say. Sarah Fuller, the whole thing, and then she's the special teams player of the week or co-player of the week. I don't know how much attention it will get this week, but I did find it very interesting. You've got an interim coach who's now making the decision. She's going to stay and play. They put a depth chart out today. Vanderbilt did. She is the only kicker listed on the depth chart. So we asked Todd Fitch about it. I think I got this signal from him, and you tell me what you guys heard, that the other kickers who were quarantined last week will not be available this week. He made it sound like they would be back and ready to go against Tennessee. The only other guy that could be in the picture is last year's kicker, Riley Gay, who isn't playing this year. He's in grad school. I don't know if he is in the protocol, wants to do this or not, but I'm curious what chapter two is going to look like here. Like, are we going to see her eventually?
Honestly, I don't know. That's a really good question out of the gates. What is the – I don't know. I don't know if it's that big of a story anymore. I think the story
You don't think
is,
if she comes out and kicks a field goal, it would be
yeah,
big?
That's the only chance it's got is an extra point or a field goal. It's the only chance it's got of creating any more story. The
because
story
then
now
she
is,
has scored points in
yeah,
college football.
Yeah, a kickoff, no one. They're just now the focus is on the head coach has been fired, moving forward. It's just I guess if she attempts something or connects and makes something – then, yeah, it becomes a story, but I think that story's run its
right.
course.
But I guess because she didn't attempt a kick, other than the kickoff, if she's the only kicker on the roster, it won't be the same because it's not the first time.
Yeah.
Right? But I think it will still get a lot of attention.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, I still think if you go to ESPN.com, it'll be one of the lead stories. It'll be on the ticker. I mean, people will be talking about it. You know, if she attempts, if she connects, especially if she connects. I mean, if she scores points, then that's certainly going to be a story. But to your point, Darren, it doesn't have the same feel as it being the first game. So I get that. But we'll see. It's only Tuesday.
But I guess I was under the impression, at least I thought, there'd be a chance that they get the other kickers back. I don't think that's going to be the case this week.
Yeah, I got that vibe,
too.
What
he said.
I got that vibe, so.
I guess we'll just wait and see. I don't know how much people are clamoring all week to figure out the Vanderbilt kicking situation.
I think honest. Now it's more of a
fact that it's Sarah Fuller? You don't think that people are paying attention to that?
I think that after last week, that people were so disgusted that you have a story like this and you couldn't even get in range to do anything was pretty embarrassing. I mean, I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter like that's like so Vanderbilt, like you bring in, get the first female kicker in Power 5 history and you couldn't even kick an extra point. You couldn't even kick a field goal. You got shut out.
But there's nothing Sarah Fuller can do about that.
No,
I'm saying
but it just kind of dampens things a little bit.
But it was a big bummer, especially if you're a Vanderbilt fan, actually cared to see them be competitive. But if you're a Sarah Fuller fan or if you're a Farr, I think it's a huge story if she gets to kick some.
Yeah.
Which she might. If she's the only kicker on the roster, she might actually get to kick one.
Yeah. I know you don't like my answer, but I don't think people all week are going to be charting this day by day trying to figure out who it's going to be. If she is, and it sounds like she is, great. People will be watching on Saturday to see if she gets a chance. If she connects, obviously it'll be a big story again. That's just what I think. I just don't think it's going to have – it blew up on Friday on our show, rightfully so, and it blew up on Saturday. I don't think it's going to have the same feeling all week until we get to that point and we know that she is, and then we'll see how it plays out on Saturday. And then it's got a chance to be a story again. You may disagree with that. That's just my opinion. All right, that'll do it for our show today. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.